This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Hi, everyone. Today, I'm speaking with my first movie stars. First, let me introduce David Alford, who is the producer of the movie Searching for the Elephant, available now on Apple TV, Amazon, YouTube, and Tubi. David started Cross Purposes Productions in 2019 and has been a driving force behind the production of all four of their films. He is married with three children. After graduating from the University of Texas with a Bachelor of Science in Radio, Television, and Film in the early 90s, David worked in Christian radio in both Austin and Dallas, Texas, in both the Christian music format, program director on Air Talent, as well as the talk format on Air Talent. He has produced three more award-winning feature-length films that have gone on to be distributed worldwide and seen by millions of people on some of the largest streaming and satellite platforms in the world. His work has been voice dubbed into Portuguese and subtitled into many languages, including Hindi, to reach a larger global audience. Joseph Stamm, who is the main actor, is 21 and very talented. Joseph grew up with a theatrical streak encouraged by his mother, and as a film enthusiast, encouraged by his older brother, who is now a film editor. He took the stage as Peter Pan when he was 8 years old and never stopped. At 16 years of age, Joseph was cast in his first short film, Cross Purposes. Working on a film set was a dream come true. Curious about everything involved in filmmaking, he started honing his writing and directing skills and eventually joined Cross Purposes Productions' creative team behind the camera. Joseph has been recognized as an outstanding youth actor as well as an award-winning adult actor. Appearing in major Christian film festivals across the U.S. and internationally, Joseph's film work can be seen globally on platforms such as Amazon Prime, Apple TV Plus, Tubi, PureFlix, and more. So now let's hear it from David and Joseph.
Hi, David. Hi, Joseph. How are you today?
Hey, doing well.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm so happy. So I'm having my first Hollywood star today on High Voice on the Mic. And today we're going to talk about your film. So David is a producer and director, and Joseph is the main actor of the movie. The movie is called Searching for the Elephant. So Searching for the Elephant has a special meaning in the farmer world, right? Can you explain what does it mean?
Yes, for ranchers and for farmers, Searching for the Elephant is a term that's used when they hire men once a year to come in and work on the ranch or on the farm. And they will hire men who will come through, and they're kind of grifters sometimes. They drift from place to place. And if they hire someone and they have the reputation of being someone who's not going to stick around long enough to do the job, they're just there looking for the next best thing. And their eyes are over the hill looking for the next ranch and the next job, and they'll take it as soon as they can give it. There's no loyalty to the ranch they stay at. They say that those people are searching for the elephant. They're looking for something that isn't there, which is that great opportunity that's just over the hill. They never find it because they're never content with what they have.
I love it because, yeah, they could be just happy where they are, right? Sometimes it's just in front of your eyes and you don't see it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I watched the movie, of course, a very good movie. I recommend to everyone, Searching for the Elephant. I watch it on Amazon, so Amazon Prime. You can also find it on YouTube, but with commercials. And also, I think, Tubi, where can you find the movie?
It's on Tubi as well, and Apple TV as well.
Okay, I didn't know it was on Apple TV. Okay, Apple TV, great. So it's a drama. It's a movie, but there's a lot of humor also in the movie. I just laugh a lot, just so you know, especially at the beginning.
Well, that's great. I'm glad you said that, because I don't think we've had anyone point that out when we've been doing these podcasts. And that's something that is like really important to us, to like keep the humanity of the situations. And, you know, these people, they don't see these situations necessarily as funny, but I think for us as the audience, sometimes we can kind of take a step back and realize the humor in the situations, especially with these two hard-headed characters that we have in front of us. So I appreciate that you appreciated the humor in it.
Oh, yeah. There was two kids I really laughed out loud. So Joseph is a very good actor. And so that was the first when your mom says that your grandpa is alive and you're like, you told me he was dead. So I really like, you know, the way you said that. What? I have a grandpa? When you're trying to escape and you're behind the truck and you say, oh, I had to go to the bathroom, and the truck leaves and your grandpa sees you like, the bathroom is inside the house. And you're like, no, I'm not doing this. That's what I was doing. I thought that was hilarious. But there was a lot of good moments in the movie. So the movie is a Christian film, right? It's Christian.
Yes.
So what defines Christian? Because in my head, when I see Christian film, I see Jesus. I see, you know, the regular, you know, Christmas movie, thing like that. But this is a drama heavy story with drugs, with family drama, with people trying to get Joseph at the end. I'm not going to, no spoiler alert. Mm-hmm. So what defines a Christian movie?
I think we have to be careful about that term, Christian movie, because really, movies can't be Christian. Only people can. When it comes to calling things a Christian movie, it's a movie, and it's a drama made by people who have a Christian worldview, which is us.
Okay.
So we treat it like we're storytellers, and we treat it like trying to make the best story we can possibly make and tell it in the most compelling way possible with the most realistic characters we can possibly come up with. And the fact that it's Christian just comes from the fact that we kind of see the world that way. We're not trying to make a movie that's, I guess, evangelical. It's not trying to convert you to Christianity. It's not, I mean, some movies do that, and that's their goal, and that's great for them, but we're really not that. That's not our thing. That's not what we do. We just happen to be Christians who tell movies and make stories that we hope everyone can find compelling. And we hope that everyone can see it and see a little piece of themselves, no matter what their belief systems are. And that's why we hoped we achieved with Searching for the Elephant. Mm-hmm. That's what we were trying to do.
Yeah. And I would say as far as it being a Christian film, I mean, I'm a Christian, David is a Christian. And so that's just kind of going to be part of our, you know, mindset and worldview going into it. And not so much as an actor, because Jason doesn't really have that faith part of him. That's not really a part of his world necessarily. And so that wasn't really something that I was thinking about as an actor so much. But yeah, that's something that's just inherently going to be part of the film, whether we mean for it to be or not, because that's just kind of who we are. And when you're making something really personal, you know, it's going to reflect who you are as a person.
Okay. So I understand better now, because I was like, okay, I saw that you had also other movies. I saw one movie that I think I would love to watch, Royal Ashes. Uh-huh. And same thing, it's about families and stuff, really heavy also. So
yes.
Okay. So what categorize, you know, this movie as a Christian, you know, based movie, but now I understand better. Okay.
Yeah, as far as being labeled a Christian movie, this one probably has the least Christian content of all of our films. Our other films are much more family and faith-based.
Mm-hmm.
They are about broken families often, because that's kind of the world we're living in. Yeah, there are great families out there that are doing well, but there's a lot more families that are struggling. So I think more people can identify with broken families trying to find a way back together again than families that are in a great, great position. So our stories tend to revolve around. Royal Ashes is about a broken family where the oldest sibling is in a situation where he must look out for his four younger siblings, because the parents have kind of dropped the ball for various reasons. They've either left or suffered with addiction, and they've left the oldest sibling to be the caretaker of other siblings. And when that movie came out, I can't tell you how many people had that same story. They said, that was me. I was raising my siblings on my own. And it was hard and scary. And at times we didn't know if we were going to make it. But it's a it's a family movie about faith. So there is some hope at the end of people finding their way back together again as a family. And I think that's important for people to hear right now, because this is a hard time. As far as addiction goes, we're here in Southwest Virginia. It's the same thing. There's addiction is so rampant here. There's hardly a family in this community that's not touched in some way. If not directly, they know somebody who's suffering with it. And so we do use it as a plot mechanism in our movie, because sadly, so many people can identify with that too. We try not to make it about drugs. We try to make it about family. It's just family that's negatively impacted. And sometimes addiction is an issue you have to deal with, but you could change it out with alcohol addiction or any other kind of addiction you want to deal with. Because the movie is really about loneliness and isolation because of your problems, and finding a way through those walls and barriers to get back to your family again is what we really kind of push in the Searching for the Elephant film.
Yeah, it was really amazing just kind of seeing the way that it connects with people on multiple different levels, you know, and that's just what we're after, is to put something truthful out there. And, you know, sometimes it is really hard, because you mentioned that a couple of times, that the films sometimes are hard to watch. And I think, you know, that's hopefully because they resonate as true to some people, you know, they see that. And I've, you know, had the opportunity to work with a lot of people who were going through recovery or who had gone through recovery for drug addiction. And just like at the premiere of the film, going in and getting to talk to them afterwards, and them coming up to me with tears in their eyes, just telling me about how real they felt that was and how they had been at those same places that my character Jason was. And then that redemption and that hope at the end, you know, just meant a lot to them. So having those conversations with those people who had really gone through it was really amazing. And then seeing other people talk to me about their stories, about how they have self-isolated in different ways because of their hurts and because of what they're struggling with, was just really fascinating to watch and to see. So I think that's really what we're after, rather than, you know, trying to win people over to Christianity.
That must be the best feeling ever, when people come to you and say, you know, I can relate. I really felt, you know, you were talking to me. This mm-hmm. is what you can tell yourself, okay, I did my job.
Yeah. Well, as a writer, you know, it's tough because you're just sitting in a small room with a computer trying to come up with these lines and this dialogue and these characters. And you're thinking, well, this is working for me. This joke makes me laugh, or this line makes me feel something for this character. And you work for several years putting this movie together and finding the right actors and getting the right locations and the money and the effort. And then you get to that night in the theater for the opening premiere, and you're there with the audience. And at that moment where you're just sitting there going, are they going to laugh? And when they do, it's like, yes, it's not just us. Or, you know, are they going to feel? Are they going to wipe a tear? You know, that kind of thing. When they do, it's just the most incredible feeling. That's like you connected with another person with your art, which is really, as artists, all we can really hope for.
Yeah. And I must also say, for the listeners, there's a little twist at the end. I was like, no, they're not going to do that. But I'm not going to I'm not going to spoil anything. But there's a little twist at the end. And I was like, okay, I got it. That's kind of funny also. Okay.
Yeah.
So, David, you started as in radio. So in the Christian radio, right?
Yes, I worked in Christian music radio for about 7 years. It helped me put me through college when I was in school. I was working there full time. Radio seems almost quaint nowadays because it seems like everything's moving away from radio. So I almost refer to myself as like that dinosaur, you know, thing I used to be in back in the days when we had lots of radio. Yes, before satellite networks took them all over. But yeah, that was something I did for a while.
Yeah. Then you went to DJ, right? You were doing in the radio.
I was a DJ or an announcer. I had an afternoon drive time show. I was a bit of a personality and played songs and did games with audience, that sort of stuff.
Okay. Then to be a teacher, then to play and direct in a theater. And then how did you come up with, I'm going to make a film? I'm going to do movies, because that's really hard.
It is. I was on stage as an actor, and I had wanted to try my hand at writing. I've been writing off and on over the decades, and I thought I would try my hand at writing a play, because our theater has a regional playwriting competition. I thought, I'll write a play and submit it, and maybe it'll get in, that kind of thing. And so I started writing this play and this idea that came to me, and I thought, well, this is good. But it didn't really felt like it was going to work on a stage. It felt different. And I had a crazy hair in my head, and I thought, well, why not just make a movie with it, a short film? It was, you know, only like a 20-page script. I thought, maybe I could be a movie. I said, but I don't know a lot about making movies. So I talked to some friends of mine who I knew had done a short film before and got some advice from them and connected with some people here in our little community, because we live in a small community here. There's in a region where there's not a lot of movie activity going on. But I found people who knew what they were doing, and at least to some degree, and we got them and some college graduates who had studied film in college, and we put them together. And over a long weekend, we recorded our film called Cross Purposes. And in that film, I needed a 16-year-old boy who was suffering from cancer. And because the theme of that movie was a boy with cancer meeting a hotshot wannabe doctor who has this bright future and this boy who has no future at all. And what would those two characters have in common? What could they possibly share if they were in the same room, hospital room together? What would they talk about, kind of thing? So I needed a 16-year-old boy with cancer. And so I had worked with a lot of youth actors in this region at the theater that I work at. And I put out a casting call. And Joseph was one of the people that I kind of just said, you should try out for this. You should give it a go. I'd seen him do some work in theater. At that theater in their children and youth program. And so I asked him to audition, and he did, and he blew us all out of the water with how authentic he is with that movie. And so that's how we got to working together on films. But that short film we put out for distribution, that little company said, yeah, we'll distribute it. And they took that little short film and distributed it worldwide. And then that's how we got connected, a relationship with them. So they've released every film that we've done since then. And it's been exciting to see these films go from this little small town, Virginia, and then be on platforms and satellite networks all over the world for millions of people to see. It's been a wild ride, I'll tell you that.
So, Joseph, how did your life change now that you're a big star, you know, on the big screen? You started very young. So how did you always love to act, or how did you start?
Yeah, no, I always loved storytelling. I always loved acting. I, you know, grew up doing theater. On my first play, I played Peter Pan and just had an absolute blast with that. I mean, and it was kind of, I've never looked back after that. And so I did theater all through high school. Once I started with film, you know, I grew up very interested in film. My older brother is now a film editor, and he does, you know, he's working for Amazon right now, doing some shows with them. So he was definitely an inspiration for filmmaking and storytelling. And so, yeah, when I went and was able to have a part in this film, with filmmaking, it was just so exciting to, you know, with theater, you definitely create something real and you create something live and in the moment in front of people. But there's something so intimate and so realistic about having an audience right here, so close to you, and then not projecting your emotions to the back of the room, doing the opposite, trying to keep everything in and not show the camera anything. You know, and not show anyone anything, but feel it all inside authentically. And that sort of work I just loved so much. And I've kind of loved doing it since. So yeah, then I got interested in writing and then collaborated with David on some stuff and then got interested in that kind of led to directing. And so I just love all different facets of the storytelling process. And I love getting caught up in a character and kind of really breaking down who they are, where they come from, developing their backstory and making them a very real three-dimensional person, you know, is just a very exciting task for me whenever I have the opportunity.
Did you help a little bit in searching for the elephant in the writing or directing, or is it another project?
Yeah. So with Searching for the Elephant, I had been working on writing, directing, and acting. And so I actually got to work on all three of those in different ways on Searching for the Elephant. And so I helped with the writing. David and I co-wrote the script. And then I did directing in the pre-production and then the post-production. But during the actual shoot, I was acting, and it wasn't a character that I could just slip in and out of. Like, I couldn't like just do a scene and then come right out of character and be like, okay, what's for lunch? You know, I couldn't just like snap out of it like that. So I kind of had to go to set and be in character all day. And it was like 12-hour shoot days for about a month. And, you know, just stay in it the entire time. So I wasn't directing on set at all. And so that was all up to David to see the vision through, which he did masterfully. And so I could, and I totally trusted his vision for him to get what we needed. And I just kind of stayed in the character the whole time.
That's a heavy character. I don't know how you do it because...
Yeah, it was definitely a heavy place to be for that long. It was definitely something that, you know, it was... It's rewarding and it's fun at the same time. It's... Even preparing, I had about like 4 months to prepare for the role. And so I was doing character work there, developing his backstory, working on his costume with our costume designer. You know, I would go to thrift shops and, you know, secondhand stores and make his costume because his appearance was so much a part of his character and what he was trying to communicate to the world. You know, was what he was very intentional about it all. And so I would like do that. I would go and walk around. I would go to different cities and walk around and in character and like talk to people and walk down the street and stuff like that. And so it was like a whole, you know,
it was good for developing the character.
It was really helpful because it was like, it was so fascinating to see the way that people looked at me, you know, and the way that people treated me. And it made me understand that edge that he has to him, the way that everyone looks down on him, you know. And it was just like really, really fascinating process. And so I definitely had to put limits on it of like, okay, when am I working on this and when am I not? Because it wasn't a place I could stay in the entire time because some things stick with you. But it was definitely something that was really exciting. And for shooting, you know, it's funny because I think some people would think the hardest things to do was like when Jason confronts Griff about his dad and he has that really emotional scene. And some people think that that's must have been the hardest scene to shoot. And honestly, that was probably the easiest scene that I shot in the entire film.
The hardest then?
Yeah, everything else was so hard because that rage that you see in that scene and that hurt is something that Jason carries with him every single day and has with him in every single moment, but he can't let it out and he doesn't let it out and he's holding it back. And so that actually I was trying to hold that in me, you know, 12 hours every day. And that was the one time I actually got to let it out, you know, and it was actually like a release of some kind, you know, in a strange way. So that's what was interesting. I don't know. That's actually a really interesting question that you asked of what was the hardest thing to shoot. That's a really good question.
I heard that actors were doing that, but I didn't know they were really doing it, being character like that. Okay.
Yeah. Just to try to be as authentic as I can. And that's just my process. Like I know some people can really just snap in and snap out of character and stuff like that. I'm just not one of those people, for better or for worse. I'm just to get to that authentic place. I just can't. I just can't do that. I'm not one of those people, but.
And David, you were going to say something? Sorry, did I cut you off?
I was going to say, it's funny you'd be surprised what scenes are the hardest to shoot. Sometimes it's just a matter of an actor not being able to find the right emotional moment. And so it's struggling to find that sometimes can make a scene really, really hard to get through. You can feel as a director, you can feel your actor kind of floundering and not be able to find what it is they're looking for. And as a director, you try to find the words to tell them or help guide them there as best you can. Those scenes where there's moments where it's like, I'm just not finding it. And then when you finally do, it's like the biggest relief. Mm. It's like, we made it through. But you'd be surprised what scenes are hard. And then it's not necessarily the big dramatic emotional scenes. Sometimes, like Joe said, that's one of the easier moments to get. Sometimes it's those little truthful moments where as an actor, you're just trying to find out how to hit that emotion with truth. And as a director, you know you're not seeing the truth in the camera in that moment. And trying to help your actor find it without telling them what to do, because that's not really your job, is a really tricky business. It's a tricky dance sometimes.
It was tough.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider
will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Like, I think the whole prison day, the day that we were shooting in prison,
that was
really tough. It was tough for everyone.
It was a real prison?
Yeah, so it was a real prison.
Well, yes.
It was?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, my God.
None of us had really spent much time there before.
I can imagine.
It was one of those things where you could just feel how oppressive the environment was. Now, it was not used. It was an empty prison. They had stopped using that facility about 8 months before.
Deal.
But at that time, it had been a high-security prison. And so, but just being in a cramped little cell with all the equipment and all the people and trying to create a moment and those feelings, the crew just kind of left there wanting to, you know, go home and take a shower. It just, it's so oppressive. Yeah. And you could feel everyone getting kind of edgy with each other. And I'm like, wow, this is just not good for people.
Yeah, it really was. I'm glad we were only one day.
Yeah.
It was like sick. I just felt sick the entire day. And like part of it was like, I think the character's association with prison and what happened to his dad there, everything else. Like there's so many associations that go along with that environment for him. But so I just felt physically just sick the entire time. And then just being actually locked in the cell was a very surreal experience, you know? And so it was, that was a tough day, I think, for everyone. And then just the logistical things, like trying to get the cockroach
to choreography.
Do what we needed it to do.
Because it was real. It was so a real cockroach. And we set him free after the shoot was over.
Yeah.
We gave him his freedom. Because he was going to be lizard bait if we didn't use him. So we actually didn't harm any animals. We saved his life during that scene. But yeah, we had a real cockroach. And trying to get him to move at the right time.
How many takes did you have to do for this one?
Man, I think we just had a continuous one, but probably about...
We had some squeamish crew members who had to leave. Some of them were like, I'm not going to do this. I'm not here.
That was huge. Did you have like a box of cockroaches to do different tech or just one that you...
We had a few of them. And one of them, we got there on the first one, I think, and he was just like... And then he had flipped himself over on his back and I was trying to flip him back over and...
I can't. The person who was in charge of this must have been like, oh, thank you, guys. Thank you. I'm in charge of the cockroach.
There's times when you question your life choices when you're sitting in a prison cell trying to get a cockroach to hit his cue. You're thinking, what have I done with myself in this world?
Yeah. What kind of karma is this? I had those little insects. The scene that really touched me, you might be surprised, is when, so Jason is a drug addict, and so Joseph play a drug addict. And when you get your dealer to come to give him, you know, the ring from your grandpa to buy some more drugs, the scene that really caught me was when he left and you fell on the floor and you tried to get the drugs. And the way you move your legs in the dirt, I was like, wow. That's some very good act. You can see that the character is like, I need this and I'm desperate. That was a very good scene.
It's a heartbreaking scene. It really is. Because you see how incredibly, when he's trying to get the drugs out of the dirt on the ground.
Exactly.
He's so desperate for the next hit. And that scene was a really difficult scene. And Joseph did a masterful job on it. It was so hard that some of our crew members had to excuse themselves.
Really?
And yeah, it was a moment where we didn't realize that one of the crew members' sons had OD'd. And so for him, that felt so real to him that he had to step away. And we had no idea. I mean, that was not something that ever came up in anything. And of course, the script was out there, so everyone knew it was going to happen. But it just was such a gripping moment that for him, he just like, I need to be somewhere else. It was a hard night. That was a really challenging film, but I thought Joe captured it beautifully. He did have to get dust out of his nose for a couple of days after that.
Yeah. Well, I remember going home and there was rocks still in my mouth, and I had actually snorted, you know, the fake things that they had there. So I had stuff in my nose, and it was a whole thing. But no, it was an emotional night, you know, because like for me, I mean, you'd live through it. And then, you know, for me, I'm okay at the end of the night. But like, it's an interesting thing because your body doesn't know that you didn't actually go through that. Like your mind knows that you were just like, but your body doesn't. And so that's an interesting thing. And then from everyone on the crew, you know, there's a lot of people that I'm really close to who is working with us. And it's hard for them to see me like that, I think. And so like, I was just making my rounds, giving everyone hugs, talking with everyone, you know, everyone.
Make everybody feel better.
Everyone was just really emotional, you know, because they have their own stories and they have their own associations, you know, with things, or they just know me personally. So it was like a really, you know, one of those nights that kind of just brings the whole crew together as a family.
I was more worried about your mom and dad when they saw it at the premiere, because I think seeing your son play that role is, to know Joseph, he's absolutely nothing like Jason at all. This is as far removed from him as you could possibly be. So having his parents see that, I think was a little hard, although they handled it pretty well.
Yeah, they did. I think it's hard for, like, I think sometimes it's easier for like my mom to disassociate it, of like she doesn't even recognize that as me, sort of thing. It seems like someone completely different. But I think my dad he's a really sweet, sensitive guy, and that's hard for him. So I remember the night of the premiere, I was like, you know, I can go sit next to you if you need me to. Like, it's okay. I'm good.
Yeah, and you have the tattoo and everything, and your hair is like crazy. So then it's not you. It's a character.
Yeah.
That's not my kid.
Yeah, absolutely.
So in this very competitive market, how do you fund the budget? Because now it's on Amazon, it's on Apple TV and Tubi. So those are big markets. But when you started at the beginning, you told me that you created a cross-production, right? You created that...
Yeah, Cross Purposes we shot was a short film that we shot for about $9,000, and it was just money that we had gotten together and put together for it. So that little short film we did was very inexpensive. And of course, we didn't have any idea what we were doing. A lot of people were working for very little money. A lot of people were inexperienced. So it was a lot of beginners getting together and just kind of doing a creative project together. Since then, our movies have grown in budget every time we've done it, because they're out there generating a little income for us with commercial stuff. Whenever you watch those things, those commercials come through, that generates a little money that makes it possible for us to make another film. And so so each film has gotten a little bit bigger in budget, a little bit bigger in budget. But to look at our films, I mean, even Searching for the Elephant, I mean, we got accused of that being a pretty large budget film, but you would be shocked at how cheaply we got that movie made. And even... It's one of those things that it's just a lot of people being really generous and a lot of people in our community supporting us. But it's not a big budget film. But we hope each time we make a movie, we make better quality, we get better actors, better sets, and it feels like more like a Hollywood movie, so that we can make even better ones after that. But in this world of independent filmmaking, you're kind of on your own for money. You have to just get people who believe in you and who support you, and you have to come up with the money yourself, because it's not laying around for filmmakers to take, that's for sure.
But I do think what's really encouraging is that, you know, Cross Purposes, that first film, you know, it didn't take off the way that it did because of the budget or because of the production value of it. You know, it's pretty shaky, you know, and that's okay. We can admit that.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen that one yet.
It's pretty shaky on the production value,
but it's pretty rough.
That's not the reason it took off. It took off because people, you know, saw something in it that they thought was truthful, and it was all in the script. It was all on the page, you know, and the story was there. And that's what people really
want.
So you'd be surprised what people don't notice when it comes to production value if they're so invested in the story and the characters and what's going on in front of them. And so that's, you know, that's the most important thing to remember.
Yeah, you can have all the money in the world to make a movie, but if you don't have a budget, a story and characters that people care about, it doesn't matter. I mean, there's examples of movies right now on Netflix that are $320 million movies that people don't care because the story isn't good and the acting's not that great and there's no story there. And those movies are being beat out by people with a tiny fraction of that budget who made a great story and did great quality work. And so the reward is in film industry now is quality work finds an audience. And we've been blessed enough to have our movies find audiences. And that's what's keeping us going.
Yeah. And I'm telling you something very funny. I follow this guy on TikTok. He's in his house making little clips all day, and they look like movies because he put them together at the end. It's like 20-minute movies. He plays all the characters with different outfit, woman, man, kids. It's so entertaining. I don't care. I'm telling you, and I watch all his movies.
Yeah.
And it's so good. The story is so good. He plays all those characters, and he's in his house. There's no set. There's nothing. And he's very famous on TikTok, so...
As long it's as amazing what you do.
Yeah, as long as you're interested, you know. Mm-hmm. And talking about movies, so I saw that you have a new one coming up that looks really, really interesting because that's a true story about what happened in Germany. So please tell us about that, The White Rose. What is this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's the first time that we've tried to do a story based off of a true story. And it's about this group of university students who went to Ludwig University in Munich during World War II. And they were German students there who saw what was going on around them and saw how Hitler's regime was taking over and saw the atrocities that were happening and knew that it was wrong. They created these leaflets and they distributed them around their campus. It was criticizing Hitler's regime. It was encouraging the German people to stand up and to do what was right and fight back. And so they distributed these anonymously. And first they were distributed just around their campus and then around Munich and then around cities across Germany. And so then the Gestapo were brought in to start hunting them down and to put a stop because this resistance was starting to stir up and protests were starting to arise. And so just this brother and sister started this movement. And so it's a fascinating story. It's a very timely story in a lot of ways. And yeah, it's one that we're very excited for.
Kind of shed some light. You know, I think the German people to this day still have a bit of a stigma about what happened in World War II. You know, and people are, in other countries and other cultures look at them and go, how could you let that happen? How could you let those atrocities happen in your country? And the truth was there were a lot of people who didn't. There were a lot of people who fought back and tried to stop National Socialism from taking over their country. And some people gave their lives fighting to stop it, like these kids did. And it was one of those moments where I thought, you know, this is time for this side of the story to be heard because there were really good people who grew up in that regime. I mean, these kids were Hitler youth. After school, they'd go camping on Hitler youth events, and they would, because at the time it seemed so harmless. It just, it was a camping thing. It was survival skills. It seemed like it was something that was not going to hurt anybody. And it morphed over time into this very dangerous political party that became a horrible regime. And so it creeped like a vine. It wasn't an overnight thing that just suddenly everyone switched their morals. Their morals just slowly eroded as things took over time. And I think a lot of cultures today around the world can learn from that. I mean, that can happen to anybody's country if they're not on guard, like these kids were, who tried to raise the alarm and tell people, stop, you got to stop this. And so the story is really about kids coming of age and wanting to swing dance and wanting to date who they want to date and do what they want to do in the middle of this horrible political oppression that tried to stop them. And so it's a movie about joy and energy and art and speaking out and doing your own thing. So it's not that kind of a gritty, dusty, black and white World War II movie. It's really vibrant and colorful about kids becoming adults and wanting to live. And that's what we hope people will enjoy it on a kind of a new level as far as World War II movies go.
Are you in the process of writing the script right now? Where are you at right now?
So we've written a feature film, a two-hour film, and we've pitched that to some producers who are excited about it. So right now where we are in the process is we're going to shoot a short film, so like a proof of concept film. What we're trying to do is make this film on a large scale. And we're trying to get it made on the level that these people deserve. And so we've made a few films, but it's hard to pitch us as the face of a project that's that large because we're kind of nobodies.
They don't know us at Warner Brothers yet.
It's coming. Vision board, people, vision board is coming. You know, you see it, it's coming. Why not?
We have to prove we can make a good film.
Yeah. Just to prove the concept, of what we're doing. So we're going to go and we're going to shoot a section of the film in the UK this fall. And then we're going to put that together and pitch it to some studios and get people who are interested and hopefully move forward with the feature film.
That's what you do. You film like a little bit of it and you show it like your resume. This is what we can do.
Yes. And you'll take that film around and show it to people and go, this is what we're trying to make. We'd like to make the full version of it if you want to get behind it and support us on that. And that's what we'll do with that short film. We'll put it in some film festivals and things too so it can get around and get some publicity.
Yeah.
But we're sinking everything into this short 15-minute video or film that will be a sample of what this story could be. And hopefully people will see it for what it is and want to make it.
Well, I just saw your little trailer and I was already in. I was like, oh, what is this? Because we never talk about, like you say, people, you know, on the good side at that time. We never talk about, it's always the bad and the Hitler and everything else. But we never talk about the people who really actually fought against them.
It was so incredibly dangerous to be that way. You couldn't talk in public. You couldn't say anything out loud because you didn't know who was Gestapo and who was SS and who was going to tell on you. Mm-hmm. So to have the right feelings was very dangerous. And to share it with other people could be life-threatening.
When it's hard to kind of, it was a very paranoid time. It was hard to kind of feel people out and see if you could share your beliefs with them, you know, your true feelings on what was happening with them or if they were going to turn around and turn you in and have you arrested, you know. So it was a very paranoid time. And so there's a lot of paranoia, but then also, you know, these kids were just so very rebellious in every way.
And a little bit naive.
A little bit naive, maybe. And very artistic and just very ambitious. And no one could have expected what they pulled off. And so
did you take that the story from a history book or is there a book?
I went to France last May and went to Normandy area, and there was a museum there that had a display about these kids, and it kind of told a little bit of their story. And they're well known in Germany. If you go to German public schools, you're going to hear the story of the White Rose kids. But outside of Germany, almost no one's heard of them or known anything about them.
No one.
So when I heard their story, I was so moved by what I saw that I came back home and started writing and telling Joseph about it. And then we sent Joseph to Munich where they went to school, to their school, and where there's a museum there for them, and he got a chance to do some research on it.
Yeah, I got to go and talk to historians there at the museum, and it was just an amazing experience because the museum is located in the university that they went to. And so it was so amazing having them tell me different stories that you can't find anywhere else on the internet or anything, different stories. from these people's lives and then say, oh, and I can go show you where that happened, you know? And that was just kind of an incredible thing to go and walk in their footsteps and kind of relive what they did. And what was great too is there's so many gaps in history of like, we know they got from A to B, but we don't know how. And so there's a gap of knowledge and how did they react to that situation? We don't exactly know. It's not recorded in history. So we have to make that up and we have to be creative, you know, which is okay. We can take that artistic license. But what was so great is then going to Munich and doing more research there and finding answers to those questions, coming back and looking at our script and realizing, oh, that's almost exactly what we had written already, you know? You go.
Yeah.
And that was just such a surreal, just like, chills moment, you know, of realizing that it just felt like these people are already, you know, speaking through us still today, and that, you know, their story is very active and alive today. And that was just an incredible thing to feel.
And there's no coincidences, so, you know.
No, exactly.
Was meant to be, I think. So why is it called, that was the name, the White Rose? Why?
The White Rose, yeah.
Why do they call it that?
Yeah, that was the name of their group, and
it
kind of symbolized eternal youth. That name will also be explained in the film, just like social media.
And that's what they titled their leaflets, the leaflet that said the White Rose on them, and they put a series of them out. And what's so beautiful, and this is a bit of a giveaway at the ending, what's so beautiful is once they were captured and arrested and were prepared for execution, the Allied forces got a copy of one of their White Rose leaflets. They made tens of thousands of copies and airdropped them all over Germany. So as the people were putting these kids to death, thinking we've settled this once and for all, it's done, they were rained down upon their heads with thousands and thousands of the very leaflets they were trying to put a stop to. So it's just an incredible moment in history.
That gave me chills. I'm telling you when you said that. Really, that gave me chills. Wow. So your audience, is it families, you would say?
That's a good question. Our audiences. What are our audiences?
Because you're talking a lot about families, so.
Tell stories. Whoever likes our stories could be our audience. Whoever wants to join in there, we'll let them in. We don't have a club.
Everybody's welcome.
I don't know.
Because we define that you're not, just for Christians. So, you know, it's open for everybody, right?
It's open for everybody. Yeah. And I hope that people, when they see our movies, will just see art for what it is. We try to tell our stories in a way that leaves room for the individual to find themselves within it. We don't try to tell them what to think and what to believe and what to do. Mm-hmm. We don't push that on them. We feel like it's like when you look at a painting and you see a painting and it moves you in some way, that painting's left room for you to put yourself into it. If we just sat there and said, this is what you need to think and this is how you should see the world and this is what you should believe, that's called a sign. And it could be a stop sign tells you to stop. And that's all. You don't need art for that. You can just put a sign up and tell people what to do and think. But art leaves room for an individual to join you and put themselves inside of it and find themselves in there. And that's what we want our stories to do. Again, we're artists who come from a Christian perspective. We're not trying to make art that tells you how to be a Christian. It's just...
No, I mean, like subjectivity is so important in films, and leaving room and space for people to project their own personal experiences and lives onto what you've made and then to take what they need back from it. And that's been so fascinating to see people... you know, say things about my performance or about the film and tell me what it meant to them. And that's not what I was thinking and not what I intended at all, but that's what they took from it because that's what they needed from it. And we left room for there to be that subjectivity for them to find that, you know? And for me, I would say that was God working within subjectivity because he gave us that art as a tool, you know, to use. And if we give him space and if we don't, you know, try to control it so much and tell people how to think, then he'll use it. You know, that's kind of my perspective. But yeah, subjectivity is just so, so important. Yeah. Just asking the right questions.
Especially for art. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Why? Okay, so... I'm very happy that I talked to you today because I really recommend this movie. It's called Searching for the Elephant. It's out now. And now you're working on your new film, which would be maybe in a year.
It'll be finished hopefully by 2026, where it'll be available after that. It might be tied up in film festivals for another 12 months after that. And then after that, we should be available on YouTube or Prime or someplace like that once we get it out. But it'll be late 2026 before it's available for public viewing.
Okay. I can't wait to see this because this is really an interesting story. Maybe you come back and we can talk about it.
That'd Absolutely. Be great. We'd love to.
Yeah. Keep in touch. Okay, cool. So I will put all the information in the show notes if people, you know, the links, they want to go and watch the movies. And hopefully, you know, good luck and everything, you know, for the future. Thank you very much for coming. Really appreciate it. And
thank you so much. And thank you for your questions. I really appreciate it. It was great to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.